Picking the right beer for the April 8th solar eclipse on episode 415 of the Actual Astronomy Podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is Shane. We are amateur astronomers who love looking up the night sky. And this podcast is for anybody who likes going out under the stars. So, Shane, we have a new Patreon supporter.
We do. Thank you, Stan. You are our newest supporter, and we really appreciate it. And as always, we appreciate all of our Patreon supporters. Helps keep the show going.
Nice. Yeah, thanks so much for that, Stan. Had a nice back and forth with Stan. Really nice to get to know another listener who's enjoying these episodes. So really great. Did
Yeah, absolutely.
you get any observing in this week, Shane?
Pretty limited. I guess I did a few times. So I took out the Borg 90FL to test it with that reducer in the focal plane, I guess, and just to see how it would work visually. You and I have talked about this a few times, and there's people online that have said, yes, you can do it, and provided some instructions. So I was very intrigued because it takes the telescope from like a 5.6 focal ratio, I think, to like a 3.9 or a 4 or something like that. And, so you get a real wide field of view. So I did that, did all of the configuring with the various Borg parts and adapters and everything. And I was able to get the APM 30 millimeter UFF to focus. So I thought, perfect. Now I need to wait for a decent night, and that came. And I put the telescope out for probably 2 or 3 hours before I even observed through it, because adding that reducer adds a lot of glass, and I just wanted to make sure everything was acclimatized. So anyway, it did work, but I gotta say I wasn't blown away by the performance. In fact, at first, there was significant distortion in all of the stars. They basically all look like seagulls. And what I did is I just reseated the diagonal into the focuser, and it cleaned it up a little bit. And I think what that was is like the faster your optical system, the more important optical alignment becomes, or collimation. And I'm suspecting that the diagonal was just a hair off, in terms of being perfectly seated or perfectly squared in the focuser. So when I reseated it, it cleaned it up quite a bit. However, there was still some issue. Like there was still some seagulls towards the outer edges, and I just didn't love it. So, I backed out the diagonal as well, just to give it a little more space, and that seemed to do good things. Like it, I think the coma got a little bit better, but at the end of the day, or night, I suppose it was.
Middle of the night.
I decided that this reducer in visual mode probably isn't for me, because the other thing that it did is it changed. Like it, the 30 millimeter UFF, I started to have more challenging eye placement. And if I wasn't perfectly centered on the eyepiece, I was starting to get some of those blackouts, which I don't get natively, like without the reducer in play. So, I didn't love it. And, the field of view wasn't actually as large as I'd hoped for. It was basically Orion's belt times two. Like still a huge field of view, but just not quite as much as I was, hoping for. So anyway, that was my experience with the reducer. I can't say I really looked at a lot because it was more testing the gear, and the test, I would say, kind of failed. But I did look at the comet, 12P Pons Brooks or whatever it is, just with the 12 by 36 binoculars. And it's pretty decent size. Like, it's pretty large, pretty easy to find. But as far as tail goes or anything dramatic, I didn't really see that. But anyway, that's been my week. How about you?
Yeah, the only thing I've been looking at, but I was out 3 or 4 nights looking at the comet. The first night I could just get it, kind of looked like a fuzzy star. But the next night I thought I could get the tail, even from the city here, just very, very faintly. And I was quite surprised at that. And then there was like 2 or 3 nights where it was cloudy in the night. The next night I got out, which I think was like Wednesday or Thursday or something like that. I can't say that I really could pick up the tail because it was quite a bit lower by then, and that we're losing And darkness at a rapid rate here of about 3 or 4 minutes a night right now. So, you know, I had to wait like another 20 minutes for it to be dark enough. And the coma was, you know, pretty large. So you could see the nucleus and then this large coma surrounding it. I was really surprised how large it was. Didn't really do like any sort of measurement or whatever, but yeah, it was pretty wild.
Yeah. Have you seen any photos of it? Is the tail growing?
Yeah, the tail looks pretty good in the photos. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess that's probably what I saw that one night. But the night where the coma was large, we did have, there was some high thin clouds. So I wouldn't have stood too much a chance of seeing it. But yeah, it was poorly timed with our spring meltup, though, because on the nights I was out looking at it, like everything was just soaking wet. Like these, like we're finally above zero. But it was like, you know, 7 or 8 degrees during the day and, you know, a few degrees above zero on these evenings. So everything was just absolutely soaked. Like I was reluctant to go driving around on, you know, muddy dirt roads out back somewhere and blah, blah, blah. I was like, it's not gonna be such a great idea. So just kind of see what I can see from the yard. Unfortunately, yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I should qualify too that my observations were from the backyard, not a dark site. So probably impacting my view. You know, comets are definitely one of those objects that does benefit from a dark sky to really get the extent of the tail and the nucleus and all of that.
Yeah, I had hoped to go to the cabin even because I think it would have been well placed from right there. But man, it's just like the idea of driving up that muddy road, like I know how muddy it was going to be. And it's too bad because we're going to have like, it's not like we had a ton of snow down, but we did have like a huge snowstorm about 2 weeks ago. And so this past week, it was just like peak melt right when that, and of course the days where the sky was clear, of course it was much sunnier and a little bit warmer on those days. So those were like our really peak days, sadly. So it just didn't quite line up with when, you know, you'd really want to be out driving around too much. Mike said he went out one night, he just set up on a road. I think he had to do some driving around to find a spot. And he took his Takahashi FS-78 out and had a pretty good look at it, he said.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah. Bit of sad news this week, unfortunately. I put this in the notes. Not sure if you saw it. But long time RESC member Dave Lane passed away after a 9-month battle with brain cancer, unfortunately. And our mutual friend here, Dave Chapman, who's been on the show a whole pile of times, sent me the obituary last week. Dave Lane had been the president of the RESC, and he'd been the president of the Halifax RESC Center for some time, and deeply involved in that center and just about every role I think imaginable. And back in the day, found some supernovas about 20 years ago, and developed the EC or Earth Centered Universe software, and had an amazing observatory of his own in his backyard, was director of the St. Mary's Observatory. And yeah, I had spent quite a bit of time with Dave Lane over the years, and he was really the person who got me, and I wasn't alone, to join the RESC. He was one of those people that, and as his obituary has stated quite correctly, he had an amazing way of engaging people and getting them sort of on board in whatever mm-hmm. it was he, you know, he was really passionate about. And that certainly bled over into me as well. And he was on the radio quite a bit. He would do like one of those noon hour talk shows, I think on the CBC for a while. I remember that.
Okay.
Pretty cool stuff. And did lots of work helping to get the Burke Gaffney Observatory there at St. Mary's University as some sort of online tweetable robotic observatory. Remember Blake Nancaro, who also unfortunately passed away last year of cancer. He was using that quite a bit when he was no longer able to get out and observe on his own. And Dave had also built this really amazing 18-inch reflector telescope, one of the, you know, sort of original Kriegenberry truss design type deals. And I remember it wasn't the first time I met Dave, because I'd been to a pile of events where Dave was like leading the event. There was like planetarium show he did once. There's a few other events that I had gone to. And then I went to my first star party. He was there with this huge telescope. And Dave wasn't like a super big person. I couldn't imagine that this guy had built this huge telescope, because it was absolutely massive. You know, an 18-inch f4.5 or f5 is a pretty big scope. And I remember I was observing with them. I was just blown away by just being able to look through this telescope. And I was just there for like, of course, like hours probably, right? Like maybe a couple hours. And he said, look, I got to go to bed, but here I'm going to put a really cheap eyepiece in it. Cause you know, like he didn't know me. And he put in like, I remember it was like an Omcon 35 millimeter Erfel or something. And he said, look, just fill your boots, observe all night if you want with my scope. I don't care. I'm going to go to bed. Just put the cover on when you're done, and walked away. And I was just like, what is going on here? I couldn't Wow. imagine that. So I get to spend like the whole night using an 18-inch telescope. And all I had done was pay $20 to register to go to this star party. So after that, I was becoming a member of the RESC, kind of whether I wanted to or not, kind of thing. Dave was also the editor of the Observer's Calendar, which I'm now the editor of. And he was the editor from 2006 to 2012. And sort of unfortunately or fortunately, he'd been continuing to assist me with the calendar and had provided all kinds of data and advice over the past few years. So he'll be sadly missed there. So yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And yeah, I hadn't talked to him in a while, but I did send him a note a few months ago, but I know he must not have been too well. He did reply, but it was rather brief. So mm-hmm. I just kind of left it at that. But yeah, he was one of those people I had sort of hoped to have on the show at one point in time. But see, he just retired last June. And I thought, well, frig, I'm not going to get on his case because he just retired. I know he was big into sailing and everything. And I thought, we'll get him on the show at some point in time, you know, like he's only freshly retired. But then sort of in the fall, I found out that, yeah, he was actually really sick. And, you know, by that point in time, yeah, wouldn't be able to make it on the show. So anyway, it's too bad.
Well, that's sad, but definitely thanks for sharing that, Chris. And yeah. Dave will be missed.
Yeah. In happier news, did you hear Mike's big news?
No, I did not.
In other 18-inch telescope news.
Ooh, I like yeah, this.
Okay. Mike has bought a big ride. Yeah, he's bought not like a final telescope, but he's bought an 18-inch mirror from Ostiowski. Am I saying that guy's name right? I'm probably getting it wrong. And it's a full thickness, like a 1.8 or 1.9-inch f3.5, I think it is. Ooh, and wow. And then New Moon Telescopes is going to build the structure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that'd probably be about the best producer of these type of telescopes and that type of mirror. You know, this is really, really awesome. I think that should be an amazing telescope.
Yeah, no kidding. No, I love it. Any time frames or dates when he'll take receive the parts and structure stuff?
I think he's hoping for like fall time frame.
No, that's great.
Yeah, the Good mirror, I believe the mirror is done, or at least it's all ground up and ready for coating. I don't know. But yeah, so there's that. I think the mirror is done. It was like on sale. It was he told me what it was, but I can't quite recall, but it was an amazing deal on the mirror, brand new mirror from this guy. Man, I wish I had looked that guy's name up. I meant to. But anyway, Ostiowski, something like that. And he's just a great mirror maker. I know a few people that have used his mirrors and say that they're amongst the best available at this time, but I think he's slowly winding things down perhaps. Anyway, Mike was able to pick it up for maybe not quite half price, but getting close to it. So, and it's sort of a little bit odd because typically these new faster mirrors are made at like a thin, like more of a thin thickness or whatever you want to call it. And this one's like a full thickness one. So that's a little bit different. And then, New Moon is going to build the telescope to accommodate that. So it should be a pretty good scope, pretty much an ideal observing telescope. I feel anyway, an 18 inch, that's f3.5 would place the eyepiece at a pretty nice height for most observing. I would imagine.
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect. Really. Can't wait for the views, especially in the grasslands. That'll be phenomenal. I suspect we'll get some almost photographic like views of some brighter objects.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So And then, yeah, he's got a couple other things I think that are gonna come in on Friday. But yeah, they're sort of non-astronomical items. I think it come in a pair. And but anyway, he's gonna be well placed for his observing in the coming year.
Oh, that's great.
So we had a very, very important conversation over text yesterday.
Yeah, we did. You were out shopping for beverages for the solar eclipse that we'll hopefully watch together. Well, we'll be together, I think, but whether or not we have clear skies yet to be determined.
I didn't even check the phone. I'm going to check right now. What's our hourly forecast here? I guess we should have a pretty
Yeah,
good.
I'm looking at the HRR right now for like 11 a.m. Let's switch it to noon because that's basically when it starts.
It says it's going to be sunny.
Yeah. The HRR shows like over Regina, kind of extending to your place, like your cottage, and sort of going north. A band of real light cloud listing at like 33% coverage. So I don't know. But like on either side, it's kind of clear with a big bank of cloud coming in from the west. So who knows?
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah,
I'll
yeah, yeah.
bring some beers. Beer is a very important element to have if you're going to observe an eclipse.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
As many people in Texas, unfortunately, may be finding out today.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's looking like, so if I just zoom out a little bit here, yeah, kind of southern Texas and almost like that path of totality looks like it's clouded for
Yeah.
tomorrow. Now, once you get up into, Quebec, Montreal is looking okay right now.
Yeah. So
And
where
then,
we are here in Regina, we're just going to have 40%. So we're just going to watch the partial, just have other things going on. And, it's shame we were chatting before the show, before we hit record, that for us, it's a fairly big commitment because there's no way we can drive or get any kind of inexpensive flights. For us, the flights are going to would have been like into the $1,000 range, unless we flew into Ontario, and then of course then we'd be trying to figure out how to drive over to Quebec today, right? As many people are.
yeah.
So
Well,
we
and
got
that's the
what?
thing with an eclipse is, especially if you're chasing totality, is you really need to be ready to be mobile for to get around the cloud.
Yeah, and it's what 40? It's a 40% here or something like that. So.
Yeah, about 40, 41%. I think it lasts 2 hours and 5 minutes, and starts just right around lunchtime, so we can have a
Yeah.
sandwich and a beer.
Awesome. Awesome. Chris wrote us. So Chris is a longtime correspondent. I just put a couple of these in because I thought it would be funny. Chris said, "Hi guys, hope you're heading out east up there. In an amazing turn of events, Texas will be the prayer capital of the world for the next 30 hours or so. I canceled my trip there on Wednesday because of the changing or the unchanging forecast. I'll be driving up to Pittsburgh, New York tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. with my daughter. It's a 6 hours, no traffic, so hopefully I have enough buffer time. She was to work on Tuesday, so we'll be back on the road after totality. I'll be off Tuesday, so I'm hoping to rest and recover. Best of luck to you both, no matter where you're watching it. Chris in New York."
Yeah, thanks, Chris, and good luck. Hopefully the drive achieves or allows you to find some cloudless skies.
Well, it's like what you were saying, Shane, because if you're sort of in the general vicinity, then you have a variety of choices open to you, right? And
Oakville.
that makes all the difference.
Yeah, it really does. And that's why the 2017 eclipse was appealing to me, because to get to Wyoming from here, that was about an 8-hour drive. So, I did that a couple days in advance of the eclipse, and then was ready to drive some more if the cloud forecast wasn't favorable. But the nice part about driving is it just reduces that investment of certainly money on flights and then rental cars and all of that kind of stuff. So, if I could have easily driven for this eclipse, I certainly would have, but unfortunately, it just didn't work out.
Yeah, my original plan, which would have been wise to stick to, if I had gone to maybe stay at my cousin's or somebody in New Brunswick, I could have driven up to it. That would have been cool. And we do have some listeners out east, Maine, New Brunswick kind of area, so Vermont even. So I think that we should have a few positive reports. And the other thing is, in the middle of winter or in fall when you're planning this, certainly the weather seems like, oh, April, like that's spring, but it's not quite spring yet. I think Quebec is actually supposed to get snow today, but then it's going to clear. So it's a very messy situation, either for cloud in the warmer areas or for mixed precipitation in the other spots. Like, this is spring sort of in the northern hemisphere, so it is more challenging, like you said, than those sort of idyllic August type weather environments.
Yeah, the one in 2017 was almost the perfect timing. You know, it was the third week of August, August 21st. And yeah, kind of in Canada and in the US, there's often a lot of clear skies, especially during the daytime, which was super favorable. And it, in fact, I think it was even kind of earlier. Like, I want to say it was right around like mid morning or late morning, if I'm not mistaken. So you also avoid like that daytime heating that sometimes generates some cloud. So really it was perfect. And you know, it's good that this one here is again, sort of midday. So hopefully you avoid any of that potential cloud creation, but because it's spring, it's just a whole nother list of variables.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wild. Peter Jedicke. Peter is from Ontario, but he was a recent guest on our show and he's going to join us next week, Shane, to talk about the globular clusters.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I think so. And Peter wrote this morning, said, in amongst other things, we're having another conversation. But anyway, Peter said, we are on station in Texas. The forecast is pretty bleak, but the fact is we've had decent conditions every day this week, despite the forecast the day before calling for cloud. So who knows, maybe the local weather is a cause for optimism. Pretty much all the folks from Ontario are relocating to southern Quebec as of tonight for the eclipse. Where are you? Back. I'm sitting in Saskatchewan, nowhere near. So yeah, we are going to watch the 40%. And it would have been, in an ideal world, I just like personally have a hierarchy of astronomy projects on the go. The primary one for me is getting my observatory finished. And, going to see the eclipse would have at least been a $2,000 to $3,000 commitment. And, this could mean bad choices for the observatory or not getting it done, or, it just wasn't going to be a great way to be spending that kind of money. Especially, that this is now when I'm going out there today to work on it a little bit. And this is when it needs to get finished, really. So yeah, I wouldn't be going out there today if I was going to the eclipse. I think most people were assuming I'm going. Even my builder was like, why are you coming out today, kind of thing. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this. It's just going to have to be the way it is. But looking at the weather forecast, I'm looking at the I don't know what this one is. I get it off a US website. Shows cloud pretty solid all the way from Texas. There's like a little bit of a clear spot by Petit. Anyway, and Indianapolis, anyway, in that general area. And then it kind of clears out just before Burlington, Vermont. I know we have somebody up in New Hampshire. They were emailing us a few weeks ago. And then through Maine is totally clear. I know we have a couple listeners there. And then through New Brunswick looks pretty decent. And then I grabbed like the whole forecast. You can really see how it plays out. So there's some areas around, like southern Illinois or somewhere that might get a little bit of clearness, but most of the states, like sort of that prime viewing area, wasn't looking so good. And then we got fairly clear over Maine. And then they were saying at one point partly cloudy over Newfoundland. But when I checked the weather here this morning, like actual Newfoundland weather, it says it's going to be clear straight across. And you know, it would have been amazing. I'm looking at, I put the charts in here, but you'll see in the path of totality, there's a little place on the southern coast of Newfoundland called Burgio.
Okay.
If you look, I put the map in here on our notes.
Oh yeah.
And anyway, that's where my mother's family is originally from. So I was like, oh, that would have been amazing I never even thought of it until I'm looking at this right now. It would have been amazing just to go there and observe a total eclipse from where, like, that's a very difficult spot to get to. There's a road with air brackets kind of thing.
Oh,
So the road says, do not drive on at night.
well,
Like, you're not
that's
supposed
not
to.
promising.
No, but anyway, Ron wrote in. Do you want to read his little bit here?
Yeah, I'm just scrolling a bit here. There we go. So my wife and I are heading to Austin, Texas on Friday night to observe the eclipse. We have Sunday night in Kerryville, and we'll be in the middle of the path on Monday. So we will be with about 500,000 of our closest friends. When I put the trip together, I did not realize how many people are estimated to show up. It should be very interesting. I think I will take Shane's advice and not bring a small scope or set up a camera, but rather just take it all in. With over 4 minutes of totality, I will have my 15 by 50s to pan around a bit in the darkness. I might also want to at least set up my iPhone on a tripod and just hit record to video the event. I like that idea a lot, Chris. Some people, well, for sure, lots of people will be setting up video for it. But what video does that's kind of neat is it captures like a lot of the sounds that you'll hear during the eclipse. And if you are in a big crowd, like you'll hear people gasping at the beauty, probably hear people like applauding the eclipse. And I think it's kind of neat to do like to do a video of the event because you get more than just the visual aspect of it, which is kind of neat. But
With a cell phone, though, my question is about this, and now I'm not a photographer of any sort. But could that damage the sensor if you have it sitting there pointed at the sun for that long?
I guess I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Maybe.
I think I would be careful. Like, I think it's like if you just sort of held it up or to the sky for a second, that'd be one thing. But if it's going to be pointed at the sun, like, that's going to build up heat on that chip. That's
Yeah, that's a good
I'd be
point.
careful doing that myself.
Yeah. No, that's valid. Maybe just set it up a minute or so before totality and then let it ride for the 4 minutes.
Alan Dyer did one I saw. It was amazing how he shot it. But I don't think you could see the sun in his shot. I think what he did is he had the video. What he did is he had the video like on himself, like doing his thing. And then he had like this thing calling out like the times and what to look for and all this stuff. And then he inlaid the view of the eclipse that was sort of being shot through one of his telescopes after the event. So that's kind of how he did it. But I don't think he pointed it at the sun. I think you could do you would just burn your camera chip out.
Yeah, fair point. Back to Ron's email. Yeah, so he just talks about this now. I think it will be fun to capture the event, the sounds of the crowd's reaction, etc. I have been doing a lot of research on the simple way to capture the event. Some say I should buy a filter for my phone, as you just suggested, Chris. Some suggest setting up a DSLR on a tripod with filter suggestions and just hit video mode or have a remote to snap pics. If someone was not going to set up an astrophotography rig but wanted to capture the event without missing out on the experiences, what would you guys suggest? Shane had addressed this in a previous episode, but for those that want to get something to take home other than memories, what would be a simple way to do it? There's a number of different apps out there. That allow you to, like, I'm not a photography person, so this is what I've not used any of this stuff, but I've heard of this stuff. And you can sometimes have your laptop, drive your camera essentially. And you can set up like a bit of a workflow or a routine on the laptop that changes settings on the camera at different intervals and then grabs photographs. So I know some people will set up all of this stuff, get it configured prior to the eclipse, and then, they turn it on during the eclipse and it just allows them to walk around and do all sorts of other observing, knowing that their camera is doing everything that they want it to do. Because one of the key things, like once you hit totality, you have to take the filter off the camera. And then you, depending on what you want to capture, you have different settings. Like if you want the sort of the coronal sort of wispiness, you know, that's a certain setting. If you're trying to capture the diamond ring effect, well, that's another setting. So if you're doing that manually, it does take you away from just watching the eclipse. And, you know, I would suggest at least maybe looking into some of these automated things that you could set up. But other than that, if you are going to do it manually, probably one of the most important things is to know the timing of everything for your location. You know, when totality begins, when it's in the middle, when it's about to end, all of that kind of stuff, so that you can just, you know, set your camera or your binoculars or do whatever you need to do. You know when to do it because of the timing. What else here did Ron say? He said, it's coming up fast, and I know you guys get lots of emails, so no worries if you do not get back to me. I'm sure you will get many listener emails chronicling the event, but I will be sure to send you a report and hopefully a little video of the experience. It will be our first eclipse. Thank you again for all you two do to help others advance in the hobby. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, that's really nice. Probably a bit late for too much of our advice, Shane.
Yeah.
to say the least. So, but yeah, no, we certainly appreciate hearing from people. Hopefully, we hear from lots more people who are right now when this is coming out, either just getting ready to observe the eclipse, or maybe just after they observe the eclipse. Hopefully, nobody's listening to it while they observe the eclipse.
Yeah. Also, just a side note is I think we're out of sync again. So this one will come out on Eclipse Day, but I think 4:14. So this is episode 4:15. 4:14 then will come out on Thursday. So just an FYI in case anybody is going, what the heck are these guys doing again? that's why.
4:14. Wasn't 4:14, here we're getting into the logistics of the podcast, but wasn't 4:14 the objects to observe?
Oh, maybe, but I think we have one coming out tomorrow, so we're way out of sync.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. It's, or we were supposed to have one tomorrow, but we'll bump that till Thursday to accommodate this one.
All right. Sweet. Good stuff. All right. So, yes, for those listening, whenever you're listening to this, which clearly we're not numerologists, yeah, send us in your eclipse stories, observations, adventures, you know, sad stories if you didn't see it, happy stories if you did, what you did instead, maybe what you had for beer in the pub when you're drowning in the tears of no eclipse. I don't know. It's all good. I moved ahead the next email. I think this is probably enough for this episode.
Yeah.
Anything to add to this one, Shane?
Pardon me?
Anything to add to this episode?
No, nothing else. Just good luck, everybody. I really hope that you are able to see whatever part of the eclipse that is available in your location. And yeah, looking forward to hearing about it.
Please subscribe, share the show with other stargazers you know, send us your ideas, observations, and questions, particularly around the eclipse and your experiences of it, to actualastronomy@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from everybody on your adventures and misadventures.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in more information, would like to contact us, or if you would like to support the podcast, check out our website, actualastronomy.com.